Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Ellie.
I am JP Mosier.
Scared me there.
He scared me. He came at me.
Easy. So we're going to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. We're in week five of these behind-the-scenes interviews that we're doing with some people that you may not have been as familiar with before on some of this. This one I was so excited for.
Yeah.
Y'all know my favorite guitarist changes weekly. Right. Like at the time that we landed this interview, he was probably my top five at the time. I love this guy. We're focusing on the instrumentalist known as Martin Miller today. Yeah. Dude, this guy is a guitar icon.
Virtuoso.
There we go. I don't even know what to say on this guy. This guy's amazing. And typically, you know, in our episodes, we do a meet the band section, a stump the genius, those kind of things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do a meet the band section, but I am going to list the guys that play with him on this because I got to, because they're a unit.
Yeah.
Benny Judd on bass, Marius Light on keys, Felix Lehrman on drums. You put them together with Martin Miller and you have a powerhouse of magnificence. And we've been waiting for, he's got a new project that's going to be coming out soon, hopefully. And we've been hanging on to this interview for that project.
Yeah.
But we've kept it from the world too long.
That's right. We couldn't wait anymore.
We got to get out. So we're going to play an older track from 2013 to introduce you guys in case you don't know. Rob, tell them what song we're playing.
This is An End in Itself by Martin Miller. This is the song of JP's dreams.
It really is. It's all my licks and more with bitterness.
So I'm going to play a little bit of something else because I want to hear a little bit of the full range of what Martin can do, right? Like that was all beautiful and melodic and tone for days and tasteful, but I want to hear him just unzip and no, but I want to hear him just let it rip. Yeah. Okay. So let's find something so that you guys can hear him fully go. Surely there's something on while my guitar gently weeps. Good Lord. This is a clip from one of the ultimate guitar jam songs. This is his take of While My Guitar Gently Weeps from the Martin Miller Session Band. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. Martin Miller chops for not just days. He's got chops for decades.
There we go.
But uses them in such a tasteful way that sometimes it's hard to be able to track down a spot where he's just shredding. But sometimes you just want to hear somebody absolutely shred. Check out, I tell you, to get the full Martin Miller experience, you need to go on YouTube.
Right.
Right? Like,
watch his medleys. His 80s medley is the greatest thing you'll see today.
Listening to Martin Miller is one thing, but he and the Martin Miller Session Band pretty much record everything on video, and you can just watch them do the magic magic in a room. They're doing this stuff live together.
It's awesome.
And it is just magical. So go check out Martin's YouTube page and subscribe to everything that he does, because he puts out a lot of new music, new singles here and there, and tons of covers of your favorite like rock tracks. Everything from like In the Name of Love, Pride by U2 to like Neon by John Mayer. Classic stuff like Easy Lover. And it's all just fantastic. The guy can wail on vocally too. The guy can really sing.
Yeah.
And he brings in fun special guests like Paul Gilbert, random, you know, just random people here and there, guitar legends, just stopping in to say hey and cut a quick cover with Martin Miller. So it's awesome. We're going to let him talk about his approach and everything that he is kind of into and what makes Martin Miller tick right now. And we'll be back to tuck you in on the other side.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with the virtuoso, Martin Miller. I really an honor to talk to you today, Martin. Thank you so much for joining us. We were very excited. You're actually our first like instrumentalist legend that we've gotten to speak with. So we're really excited to talk to you today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure.
Let's start with, I think a lot of people who know you in the last few years are going to know you from the Studio Session Band and your video hangouts on YouTube. That's probably a way that a great many people have discovered your music. Can you tell us about those sessions? What's the process like for getting everything together and arranging these, you know, what's, you know, a massive 30-minute 80s medley and getting those things rehearsed and getting the recording done? Walk us through that whole process.
All right. So I guess it starts with an idea first. So the way this whole project got started is that I was playing at the Ibanez Guitar Festival in Germany in 2016, and the guys from Ibanez Germany assigned Felix Lehrmann to be my drummer, who I was a huge fan of for many years before we even met. So that was my first chance to play with him, and they put a bunch of recordings from that show online, and I thought the playing was really, really good. I wasn't too pleased with the sound, though, so I asked those guys, can you just give me the soundboard recording so I can remix them and make them sound better? But those didn't exist. But I did realize the potential of us playing together in this format through those recordings, so I invited those guys together, and we gathered in a studio here in town in Leipzig in November 2016, And we just did my original songs at the time. However, we did do a cover of Little Wing, which was just like an afterthought. We had two more hours to spend in the studio. Why don't we jam a tune? Okay, let's do Little Wing. Benny, go ahead, sing something. And that cover kind of took off. And so I realized there's maybe potential in doing some covers with this band. So Marius, our keyboard player, just had his studio set up at the time, and we went into his studio to do a bunch of covers, and I couldn't decide on which Pink Floyd song to do, so I made a medley out of it. Yet again, that one took off, so yeah. The medleys became a thing, and nowadays it's really later on we had guests over and all that stuff, and nowadays it's just trying to gauge what our listeners would be potentially interested in and come up with a cool idea. So we did band medleys for the longest time, like Queen, Pink Floyd, Genesis, etc. And I thought I always had kicked this idea around of doing a themed medley, which was like the decades medley. So what I do is I sit down at home and I grab a bunch of recordings. So the first thing will be research, right? So you type into Google top 180 songs or something like that, and you make a short list. And then I probably have a short list of about 20 songs that I'll cut down to 9 or so. And then I'll grab a bunch of recordings and throw them together and realize that the medley is 50 minutes long and I have to throw another 4 to 5 out. So that's really how the initial spark. And then usually what I do, I scour the internet, because the way we orientate ourselves is usually not, or not usually, oftentimes it's not the studio version, but some obscure live version with a really cool outro idea or a really cool intro idea or a jam in the middle or something like that. And we base those things off of that. And I just put together an MP3 with all those tunes. And then we have very different approaches to how we memorize this stuff. But by the time I've put this demo MP3 together, I have the whole thing memorized by ear anyway, so I don't need to write anything out. But Benny, our bass player, is writing stuff out. Felix Lehrmann, our drummer, he's basically he'll show up in the studio completely unprepared, and he'll listen to the recording, the 30-minute recording, the evening before we record it for the first time, write out a bunch of things, and then nail it first take.
Wow.
Dude, that's so cool. Yeah, Felix is a fantastic drummer. I'm glad that you mentioned that he was the first that you met, because I was going to ask who you met first and how it all started. So I guess it started with him.
Yeah. I had this Marius, our keyboard player, I've known that guy for 18, 19 years now, from more than half of my life, and we've been doing music together for ages. And Benny is a friend of a friend who I've always looked up to and always wanted to work with, and I just was looking for an opportunity to get him over to play something together. And as I said, I was a fan of Felix's for a long, long time before I played with him. So yeah, that whole session thing was basically just an excuse to get that guy in the studio.
And there'll be times throughout this where we just rapid fire things that we love about you and the band members. I love Felix's restraint. Like, he's got the chops that he could play all the way through. For our listeners that aren't as familiar with him, just watch the intro that he does on While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yeah.
Like, just the intro shows what he's capable of, but he's very selective in when he uses those moments. Like, that's and cool. That highlights the band amazingly. Like, he could overplay, but he doesn't. He's got such good restraint as a drummer.
The Little Wing intro is insane, too. The Little Wing intro is absolutely crazy, too. I still can't, I still try to to this day count that, and he still throws me. So I just looked at him really hard, trying to find the one when he would go for the
final crash. Watch that arm go for the cymbal. Yeah.
Yeah, you touched on the medleys.
Yeah, exactly.
You touched on the medleys, the Police one that you talked about, Toto, the Pink Floyd one. The Pink Floyd one was in 2017, before you even had your signature model guitar. So that was like,
that was funny. That was there's a little anecdote there. That was recorded, I think, 2 days after Ivan has revealed to me that I'm going to have a signature guitar.
Oh, wow.
That's cool. So it's kind of a grand finale 2 days after not having your axe highlighted.
and from that same session, we also did Carry On Wayward Son, and there I'm playing the prototype for my signature guitar, which is, again, they handed that to me 2 days prior to the recording. Wow. It just wasn't, at the time, it wasn't perfectly set up, which is why it didn't, it just got over from Japan, and I didn't have a chance to set it up, which is why I went for the Ibanez RG.
Okay.
In that recording.
I was going to ask, and this is the perfect time, what is that process like first of all, the feeling of getting the phone call, hey, we want to do, you know, the MM1, the MM7, what is the, and then what's the process like of getting all that just the way you want it, you know, electronically and feel wise, how long does it take? What's the process like?
Now, the guys did a really good job. They actually tricked me. They told me in person. It was Frankfurt Musikmesse at the time. And I drove over, and what they said to me, I was going to get a prototype of one of their new line of guitars, the AZs.
Okay.
Was nothing about signature guitars, etc. And I was with Ibanez for a few years at that time, and we needed to talk about some contractual details anyway to extend our work together and etc. So I was expecting just to sign a new deal, and they dragged me into a recording studio and handed me that prototype guitar and said, "Let's do some videos so we have something so we can document the process of getting these AZ guitars together." And then the artist relationship manager at the time dragged me into a different room and said, let's sign the contract. And actually, we want to add something to your contract, but we're going to give you a signature guitar.
That's awesome. did the prototype already have the flame maple top and the mahogany body, which is different from the rest of the Ibanez AZ series? Or was that something I'd like to change this?
It was an alder with a quilt maple.
Okay.
Quilt top and an alder body. So really all I wanted to change, because the guitar for me was perfect, all I wanted to change was the mahogany, mm-hmm. the body wood, and the aesthetic, I just like flames more than
It looks great. So, oh, it's such a, it's a first. I guess the first time I discovered you, you were playing that guitar on the "Isn't She Lovely" video with Tom Quayle. It was the first time I saw it, and I was like, "Who is this guy?" It was probably been around early 2018, I guess, when it came out.
Yeah,
and I've been hooked ever since. And it's like, for our listeners, check that one out. It's the perfect jazz version of this song. And then I noticed the MM1, and I was like, "That's a great looking guitar." And then I guess that's when Tom plays his TQM1 for the first time. Is that the first time that he played that?
Yes. So those videos were shot in November 2017. And at the time, we weren't allowed to talk publicly or reveal any of those guitars. So nobody at the time knew that Tom was even playing Ibanez. So we had to hold on to those videos for a while before we could release them. But that was the week we got those guitars.
And that shows – that's the same guitar that – that is the most – that's super versatile because, you know, you're playing super clean there, but it's got all the shreddableness that you need in your other videos too and songs too. So I love that guitar so much.
Yeah, yeah.
So
this one right here?
Yeah. I can see it right back there. Look.
There it is. And this is another one. I have two of them. This over here is another one. This one is the one that I've been playing for the last 2 years.
Okay.
Because the only difference is this one has 9 to 42s on it. This one has 10 to 46s on it. And I tend to gravitate toward the lighter gauges these days.
Okay.
Getting old.
That's okay. You don't lose any tone quality by going to the nines. It sounds good and thick. It's wonderful.
It sounds for certain things, it sounds better, quite honestly. It doesn't sound as good for rhythm playing, yes, but it sounds, in my opinion, a little bit better for lead playing, especially distorted stuff.
While we're talking about gear, do you want to talk a little bit about the MM7, the 7-string that's coming, just came out with the Seymour Duncans? And I love the design philosophy on this. Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Gorgeous. For our listeners, I know you're just listening, but me and Rob are just oohing and aahing over these great looking guitar, the thickness of the neck. I'm sure everybody's expecting a Dream Theater medley now with that. But
well, I got to say, two reasons why that hasn't happened. And one of them being not everybody in the band is a Dream Theater fan.
What? Okay.
I'm not gonna reveal who. I'm a huge fan.
Everyone has their preferences.
And the second reason, which is the bigger reason in my opinion, is the second reason is you cannot do much with that music. It's just it's set in stone, and I wouldn't know what to do with it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, with the 80s stuff in particular, that stuff was all on drum machines and synthesizers, or most of the music was programmed. And now we're like the Depeche Mode stuff, and we're playing that with a band that gives it a unique twist.
Yeah.
The same with the Queen stuff, especially the 70s stuff that sounds that where the sound is less heavy. We add a lot of heaviness and aggression to that. That brings that to the new age. And I wouldn't know what to do with Dream Theater, quite honestly. There's no room for improvisation.
It's all filled.
The music is already very cutting edge sounding.
Yeah, that's good. Well, so I love what you and Nico did and Enjoy the Silence with the guitar harmonization. That was so good. It helped me go back and rediscover them. I didn't listen to it.
And that those same types of things, I wouldn't know how to apply those ideas to Dream Theater. Which is why it hasn't happened yet.
That's great.
That's a good point.
Never say never. I mean, if I ever get Mike Portnoy to the studio, I might
do Dream
Theater. Sure. Yeah, things are going to happen. We throw around terms like guitar god, you know, that kind of thing, but you're definitely in that of that elite level of guitar player. What does what does your practice routine look like to get to where you are, and then to even, you know, to maintain your, you know, your chops and your ear and all that stuff? What's your practice routine?
Yeah, so are we talking about back in the day or these days?
Both.
Because those are very different answers.
Yes.
Yeah. So back in the day, it was just spending a lot of time on the instrument, quite honestly. Like I grew up in a small village. I didn't have a driver's license, and I basically had none of my friends from school anywhere nearby. So needless to say, I was bored. But I did have a big basement with a cranked amp in it. So I was just really playing guitar all day. I had a good teacher early on. That was very good. A teacher that focused me on the fundamentals that all I wanted to do was shred, but he kept me focused on some more serious musician skills that you have, like your ear reading, your rhythmic vocabulary, etc. So he kept me in line. And then during college, it was discovering all these kinds of more or the all these more advanced concepts like playing over changes, more in depth functional harmony, playing in different types of ensembles. That was a lot of that. Was just immersed myself in becoming a better musician. And nowadays, when I play, it's usually for a purpose. There's always a kind of purpose behind it. It's either to do a recording for somebody, or to record my album, or to give a lesson, or to make a video or a demo or something. There's most of the time there's a purpose to it. And when I get a chance to sit down and play guitar just for the sake of enjoyment, I usually just try to keep my technique up.
Okay. Yeah. Who are you've had several, guests in with the session band, and that's always a lot of fun to see who might pop in. Paul Gilbert was one of my favorites.
My favorite was Andy Timmons. I love Still Got the Blues, the Gary Moore cover.
Yeah. Who are your dream, collaborations at this point? Who are the people that you would love to have come sit in with the session band?
Well, my heroes, they would be definitely, I would love to have John Petrucci over.
Sure.
And I don't think it would have been that unrealistic hadn't the pandemic happened, quite honestly. Who knows? And there was potential there.
Okay. There was communication is what we're hoping. That's what.
Right. Well, I'm not going to go that far, but there were some ideas thrown around. So anyway. Well,
here's to hoping. Me and Petrucci's at the upper echelon of my wish list. Yeah. We got asked this question, who we would like to have on to interview a few weeks ago by somebody, and Petrucci was in my top three.
Yeah, man, Petrucci would be amazing. Steve Morris would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Steve Morris, I would love to have. Steve Lukather, I would love to have.
Absolutely.
So many. Mike Stern, I would love to have.
Yeah.
Gosh, so many.
That's a good list.
I would love to have something out of the box a little bit. I would love to have the singer from Dirty Loops.
Oh,
Jonah Nielsen.
That's good. I can see that. That could work. Yeah. That would work really well. Yeah, actually, I like that. That's
yeah, good. Yeah. Joe, I wouldn't be opposed to Joe Bonamassa. So I wouldn't say no to him.
Sure. you wouldn't kick him out of the room.
John Mayer would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I do have a question about the studio room, since we're talking about that. I noticed here recently on the most recent that I've seen you post is the Sunshine of Your Love with Kirk Fletcher. And I've noticed you've moved to the other side of the studio versus where you're used to.
Good catch. Yeah.
What was the reasoning behind that? Is that something that just you wanted a different look, a different feel? Is it better for guests, your setup?
Well, the initial idea was I wanted to – two reasons. First of all, I hurt my ears a little bit last year, and I needed to be a little bit further away from the drum kit.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because I did – my ear protection didn't arrive in time, so I wanted to be a little further away from the drum kit. But also, my microphone because we didn't have Matthias, the other singer, with us on that session, I was doing all the singing, like the 80s medley, the Kirk stuff. It's all me singing, so we want to have my vocal mic a little bit further away from the drums.
Sure, sure. That's very practical.
That is always a drag to filter out those drums from the mics. Yeah. And if anybody ever asks, a lot of people think our stuff isn't, our vocals aren't live because there's no drum bleed. There's a ton of drum bleed, but for those in doubt, check out Isotope RX. It has a deep bleed algorithm, and that's how we get the drums off.
That's awesome.
Oh, off those microphones. But still, the less there is, the better. And also, I think visually
Proctor
it's an improvement.
Proctor kills it on the Police medley. Excuse me. He's awesome. He's a rock star.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Those
the great singer. And also I think for visuals, it's a little bit better. I always found that in that one corner, I'm always a little bit isolated from the band. So you rarely ever get a shot of myself with somebody else.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's normally your moments in the other corner, in the old school corner. Mm. But now you get
it's
to
also
see you.
For film reasons.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, that's good. It's smart. It's a smart, right. smart
it's,
play.
It's funny. You make one change, and it changes the entire camera setup. So you've probably noticed how the recent videos look completely different from the others.
Yeah, and it's...
And it's partly because we have to change so many things around as soon as one person shifts their positions.
Yeah, very interesting.
One question that I'm just dying to ask that I want to make sure I get through before we run out of time. On the 80s medley, Benny's not playing his bass pad. I was like, that's weird that he's not standing there. Did he forget it or something is my first question. And number two, have you ever played on one? Because I have it. I think it's brilliant.
Brilliant.
Does it make a difference? I would imagine so.
Well, first of all, it's that thing. You can set up the volume. It's like a super low speaker there, right? And depending on how heavy you set it, it's like an earthquake sending on that thing. If you want it to be, it feels really cool. And I wish I would have a really cool answer for this, but he just plain forgot it. He forgot it at home.
That's awesome.
But we were already joking when. Usually we get the question, what is the bass player standing on? Now the new question will be, why is the bass player not standing on that thing?
Not standing on. That's good. That's good.
Well, and the funny thing is, we never answer those questions because it's a meme at this point.
Ah, gotcha.
We just take enjoyment out of not telling what it is.
Well, we feel special that we know.
Yeah.
Those of y'all that don't know Benny, fantastic bass player. I love his solo on Between You and Me at the Off-Road Studios. Go to
that was the first session we ever did.
Dude, so
that was
good.
In Leipzig still, yeah.
Go so good. Go for the listeners, go listen to minute 115 and it's wonderful. And you're no stranger to playing with great bass players. I mean, Tom Getz Band, to be honest, is my favorite song on that project. I know it's slow starting, but I mean you've played with great bass players, so that'll put Benny in the upper echelon of I think he's fantastic.
It's just a complete package of a musician. Plays great bass. Produces really well, mixes really well, sings really well, plays acoustic guitar, writes, does it all.
That's awesome.
And he's a good-looking guy, too.
Never hurts.
that helps. That's
it right. Never hurts, especially when you're on YouTube.
That's why me and Rob are audio only. Like, we know our role.
we have a 4% female audience, and that is probably due to him.
So. He's the 4.
Otherwise, we'd be at 0.
That's great.
What
he
are
brings the, in the 4%.
What are the benefits and challenges of directing some work to a visual medium like YouTube and just in YouTube in general, you know, as an income stream and as a promotional thing? What are the benefits and challenges of being a you know, an incredible musician and performer and then adding YouTube into the mix of something that you regularly do?
Well, the biggest challenge I face nowadays is to deliver regular content because the algorithm is very hungry for new content. And with the type of stuff I do, it's just not realistic to be feeding a new video every week. So sure. I try to keep it at one a month, and I've been holding pretty true to that promise. Except when the medley is around the corner, that might take an extra month to just put together.
Sure.
But other than that, I try to get a video out every month. And I, even with the lockdown in place, I have enough stuff pre-recorded, fortunately, to,
oh, that's great.
To be sustaining the project. But that, yeah, that's a big one. So developing a certain quantity of content while not compromising the quality is a particular challenge for me. And then also, what I find really challenging on YouTube is once you're pigeonholed into a certain category, like live music covers, it's very hard to do something else because you have a certain, your audience has a certain expectations of what they're going to get when they log onto your channel. So whenever I do something like that, like the introduction to my signature guitar, I actually lose a ton of subscribers.
Oh, wow.
So in a way, I would wish for there to be a way to be a little bit more experimental on my YouTube channel, to be doing to have a bit more freedom and liberty to do things that I just feel like doing in the moment. But at this point, it's become such a pillar of my career that I gotta gauge the risk a little bit.
Well, I loved the video. I watched the whole thing. I thought it was wonderful. So you got a fan
Thank
over
you.
Here. Yeah. And you don't seem to have suffered too much. You went from 200,000 to like 400,000 followers in like a year. So that's a pretty quick move.
Yeah. It's interesting. But for anybody who's out there in YouTube land and they get frustrated that after 3 years, nothing's happening, my channel had like 8,000 subs for the first 10 years. And then 16,000 in the 11th year or something like that, or in the 12th year.
Wow.
And then I just looked back at a video I did in November, I want to say November 2017, where I'm celebrating 40,000 subscribers. So that was 3, a little more than 3 years ago. And then a year later, I celebrated 100,000, then a year later, 200,000, then a year later, 400,000. So
that's amazing.
I was on YouTube. I did my first upload in 2007. It only took 14 years to get there.
Patience.
That's right. That's
yeah. Persistence.
Yeah, there's something to be said for consistency over time. What's the phrase they use? Like you're like a 14 year overnight YouTube success, you know, that kind of thing. So.
That's the kind of thing they said to Snarky Puppy when they won their first Grammy. I think they won the newcomers Grammy. And it's like, what about those 15 years we slept on people's couches?
Right.
That's good.
Yeah, we're newcomers to you. But we're
been doing it forever.
Newcomers to the world.
Yeah.
How about, do you remember the first song at your first official like gig, like first band gig you ever played? Do you remember anything about that?
I did get my first proper band I was in was a school band back in the day when I was like 13 years old or something. And what did we, I think we played All Right Now by Free.
Okay.
But I did not play it properly, right? I played it with power chords, not with the actual slash chords.
Sure.
Triads. I just moved around the power chords to whatever root note there was. It was horrendous. And somebody else played the solo. I didn't play the solo.
Okay.
I couldn't.
Growing up, what guitar was number one on your most wanted list? What was the holy grail of guitars for you as a kid or as a young player?
It's an interesting one. I was never really drawn towards the instruments too much that my heroes played too much. Mm-hmm. Like I did. One of my earliest guitars was a blue RG550EX with a plexiglass pickguard. That was a great one. Of course, you dream of the Stephen Morse models and the John Petrucci Ibanez models and all that stuff. But yeah.
I
was never too crazy. I was never too crazy about gear, to be honest with you. I didn't even understand when I would log onto the Pink Floyd website, and I love David Gilmour's tone. Okay, let's see, what was he using? And I didn't even understand all those terms. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, where's the multi-effects unit? Where's the zoom multi-effects unit that he's using? Where's the tone coming from? I don't get it. None of this stuff makes sense.
That's an important question for us because that's how I met Rob. He was playing a Wolfgang through a 5150, and I was like, I've got to meet that guy.
Yeah.
He was playing at this conference, and I was like, I've got to meet – because that was my dream guitar was the Eddie Van Halen Wolfgang. I was like, I got to meet the guy that's playing that. So yeah, that's how we became.
Yeah. My influences were immediately visually apparent by the guitar.
It was funny because I was already a Steve Morse fan, but then my first proper electric guitar was an Epiphone Les Paul. Because I liked Les Pauls, but not because of Jimmy Page or anything. I just liked the visual of it. For some reason, as a kid, I didn't make that connection between this guy's playing that guitar, so I got to have it.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't make that connection somehow.
Very interesting.
Well, there's a question that we ask everybody. Martin, thank you so much for your time. You've been a lot of fun. This has been super cool for us. So you're on tour. You go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of that, I'll tell you mine so you can think for a minute. I get a Three Musketeers bar. I don't know if you have those over there, but that's a candy bar that we have here. It's the most ounces for the money. My mom would say you could get any candy bar you want, so I would get the biggest one, the most ounces for the same amount. What is your snack food of choice? And we're so excited because we're hoping you say something that we don't have in the United States. So what is your snack food?
It'll be... Okay, maybe. No, you actually do have it in the United States because I had it in the United States already. I would probably get a San Pellegrino canned drink.
Okay.
It's like a orange juice with sparkly water.
Yeah, sparkling water type.
That one's kind of nice. My favorite drink of all time, it's not here, right? I don't have, usually this place is full of empty bottles, but right now it is. you don't know this, it's Club Mate.
Whoa. Okay. One more time.
Club Mate. It's like Club Mate. But okay. It's actually mate. It's a kind of plant from I think Latin America, and it's basically it's sparkly tea and it's kind of bitter.
Okay,
and it's my favorite drink ever. I drink it all the time, so I would get that
fascinated.
For sure.
Now we'll look it up. Love looking up stuff that we don't have here.
You cannot even get it in most of Germany, though. It's mostly in East Germany, and they do not have a marketing budget, though. So they're never on TV or PBS or anything. It's like a. Yeah, but they've kind of rose to fame in the last 5 to 10 years for some reason. Yeah.
Well, if we ever see one, we'll pick it up and check it out.
That one I love. Yeah, man. Do you guys know Troy Grady?
I don't think I do.
The Cracking the Code guy?
Uh-uh.
Oh, I think
he's the guy who does all the slowdown videos of people people's picking techniques.
Yes, yeah.
And I went to visit him in New York one time, and he found a place for me, the one place in New York City where they sell Clubmat, and got it for me when I visited him.
That's cool.
That's very sweet.
That's kind of cool. So it's really hard to find in the U.S.
Well, if you ever come to Nashville, I have a mission. Now I have to find the special drink, try it for myself, and have some waiting for Martin when he comes to visit.
Exactly.
Exactly. Thanks so much, Martin, for joining us. It's been a real treat, and our people are going to love it. We can't wait to get the episode out.
Thank you, Martin, so much. Yes. Keep doing what you're doing. You're great.
Thanks, guys.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was Martin Miller.
Oh, man.
Joining us from his beautiful home studio.
I'm sorry you guys couldn't see how good looking those guitars were.
Good night. Oh, his signature guitars are so gorgeous. I'm not in the market for new guitars anymore. I'm good on guitars. I don't need new guitars. But his is one that I just still go every time I see it. Teal turquoise with the roasted maple neck.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Need it. Anyway.
I feel like I could carry that guitar with any outfit I have and it look right. Like I could hold that guitar and it's perfect for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I tend to let's just go all black and then it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Man, I love that guitar.
Do you think it matters? If you see somebody on stage, does it matter to you if their guitar doesn't match any of the attire or aesthetic of the band? If you went to see the Blue Man Group, right? Everybody's wearing all black and blue faces, and somebody has a guitar that's like bright red with a tortoiseshell pickup.
I notice. Does it matter? I don't know, but I always notice.
Okay.
Like if I went to see Vestal Goodman and she was playing a BC Rich, I'd be like, something doesn't look right. Like I would definitely pick up on that. But
I need somebody to Photoshop that. Quickly, please, and thank you. Wow, yes. Okay, I get that. I haven't, I've definitely bought guitars with certain colors in mind, thinking I want to get a neutral color. Maybe that's the better way to say it.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Should that be a consideration when you buy a guitar? Should color matter at all when you buy a guitar? Or does it matter? You know what I mean? It doesn't matter, right?
We'll leave it up to you guys.
Yeah, let us know. If you see somebody playing a guitar, have you ever in your life gone, they really should have gone with a different color. If this is going to be their look, they should have had a different color guitar, you know?
I tell you, every time I see Clapton playing that Red Strat that he played on his 80s tour, it looks a little different because it's not blacky or that gray one that he plays. And I don't mind it. I like that era Clapton. I think it looks cool.
And you probably associate it with a certain sound, set of songs.
I look at that and I say, oh, that's Journeyman right there. That's his Journeyman guitar.
Yeah.
So
That's really interesting. I totally understand what you're saying. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. That would be a fun conversation.
We should have asked Martin about that.
Right. All right. We hope you've been enjoying our sort of tour of the music industry. We've got another stop next week coming up. Until then, do something for me real quick. Stop what you're doing right now. As a matter of fact, if you're about to buy a guitar, stop. That's a tacky color. It's going to look terrible on you.
Don't go pink.
Leave the pink on the shelf and stop what you're doing and go to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Great Song Pod. Follow, subscribe, do all the things. Join the Facebook group, Great Songs and the Great People Who Love Them Greatly, because we talk about a lot of our upcoming stuff there. We play some games, we do some giveaways, we tend to announce new things there first. So check that out if you really want to get involved with the show. If you want to go the next step and be a part of helping us produce the show, you can do that at patreon.com/greatsongpod. And when you do that, we can say thank you by giving you things like early release, ad-free shows that are extended, full-blown bonus episodes that are Patreon exclusive, and lots of other goodies as we find ways to give things away or say thank you or make you more of a part of the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. No matter how you're listening and no matter what level of engagement you're on, if you're just finding us now, this was not a regular episode. These are between seasons episodes. Typically, we'll go deeper, do some research on, you know, a deep dive on a song or an album or even an artist, and do a lot more before the interview comes along. But we're giving you these little I was gonna see how long I could keep it going. I don't know. I was just waiting on JP to either break or stop me.
He's stuck. The record is skipping.
You were just going to let me go.
I was like, how many littles?
Anyway, we're giving you these episodes as a way to spotlight some different perspectives in the music industry. And we'll be back with season 10 in just a couple weeks. My gosh,
season 10
coming up soon. But we'll see you next week with another stop on the tour of the music industry. Until then, I'm Rob.
I am JP.
Go listen to some music.